Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, WISO Community Voices producer Susan Burns offers us a report on artist Judd Yalcutt. In February, the University of Dayton will honor his nearly 50-year contribution to the arts. Bill Felker has this week's Poor Will's Almanac and Emily McCord, this week's Politics Ohio. Up first, last week, we reported that state officials saw the number of new business filings in Ohio as a positive sign for economic growth for the state. Applications to do business in Ohio last year reached more than 88,000. Although most officials will tell you that the economy is far from where it needs to be in terms of a full recovery, business leaders say there are a number of positive signs for our state and local economies. Jason Antonick is manager of business and economic development at the Dayton Area Chamber of Commerce.
The unemployment rate has dramatically improved over the last 2.5 years. In August of 2010, Dayton's unemployment rate was almost 10.5%. So fast forward to November of 2012, our unemployment rate is 6.5%. And that 6.5% is almost a full percentage point lower than the current national average. So Ohio's economy has recovered more quickly than many other Midwest states, and this has contributed to the second straight year of population increase in the state of Ohio. Another good factor is the local housing market has increased dramatically. Interest rates continue to be at all-time lows. It's a great time to get a mortgage loan. For a while, mortgage loans were hard to get. Those underwriters were uptight, but those lending practices have lightened up. They've improved. And we're seeing that. Home sales increased 40% from November of 2011 to November of 2012. And that's a really big jump within a year. Our region is rich with educational resources. With over 35 institutions of higher learning, it can be said that our greatest export is higher education, but we don't want that. We want to keep our talented young adults right here in Dayton. There's a correlation between interning while in school and residing in the Dayton area after graduation. It's kind of amazing. Only 32% of students who did not intern while in school stayed in Dayton, whereas if you interned while being a student, then it's a much larger percentage. 68% of the time, those graduates stayed to live and work in the Dayton area.
Things are certainly looking up for interns. There's a lot going on with regard to getting interns paid. Also, SOCHE, the Southwestern Ohio Council on Higher Education, is working to increase the amount of interns here in the Miami Valley.
Oh, absolutely. And the organizations that you mentioned, and there's another one, Dayton Interns, it's a real positive force. The Third Frontier, they have an internship program, and it's paramount that we keep that keep the brain drain from happening in Dayton. We want to keep our students right here.
So let's jump back to businesses real quick. And is there a way to gauge the amount of new businesses coming into the area? I understand the amount of restaurant openings in the Dayton area are particularly high at this time. And are there other industries that Dayton is bringing in right now?
Well, I think there is. You know, for a long time, Dayton was an automotive city, right? You know, the auto manufacturing sector was huge here. But because of the global automotive crisis, the auto industry divested locally, and so now the economy is rooted in high-tech growth areas like information technology, IT, companies like Teradata, LexisNexis, Corbis. You find the advanced manufacturing sector improving. Mound Laser and Photonics is an example there. I'd say the biggest economic engine of the area has got to be Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the Department of Defense. We're talking about a $5 billion local economic impact, 29,700 employees within the fence, making it the largest employer in our area, and 50,000 employees indirectly based on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Healthcare, it's phenomenal. You see it downtown. Premier Health Partners now occupies 110 North Main Street, almost fully occupying that building, and that's great. The addition to Miami Valley Hospital, Kettering Health Network is improving, Children's Medical Center, all of these places are expanding and improving.
Can you tell me anything the Chamber might be working on?
Definitely a few things that the Chamber's working on. You know, we're the private sector champion. You know, one of our major projects that the Chamber pushed for was the I-75 modernization project. It's not that the Chamber loves orange barrels or anything, but, you know, businesses came to the Chamber and informed us traffic jams and problems with the interstate malfunction junction. And so the chamber was instrumental in pushing for the modernization project to improve the flow of goods and services to the interstate system. The chamber monthly puts out economic indicators highlighting employment trends, home sales, airport figures. And my department with the chamber, Economic Development, is tasked with 200-plus business meetings a year. And these are retention and expansion surveys that I'm doing with local businesses. I want to make sure that these businesses are happy, that they're staying in Dayton. Are they looking to expand? Do they need a larger facility? What are their needs? I want to make sure that they stay here. So that's what the chamber does. There are a number of entities, you know, similar to the chamber, Downtown Dayton Partnership and the Dayton Coalition, Dayton Development Coalition. There are a number of these entities working together with businesses of all sizes to make it comfortable for them to move, to stay in the Dayton area. That's paramount for us.
Jason Antonick, Manager of Business and Economic Development with the Dayton Area Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
There was also news released later in the week that could have economic consequences for the Miami Valley. WISO News Director Emily McCord has the details in this week's Politics Ohio.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord. The Air Force Materiel Command announced cuts at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base this week in response to budget uncertainty for the Defense Department and for the Air Force's own budget shortfall of $1.8 billion. I'm joined today by Michael Gessel. He's the Vice President for Federal Programs at the Dayton Development Coalition to talk to me about the impact. Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome.
So these cuts that were handed down from the Air Force this week, there are things like civilian hiring freezes, as well as some temporary workers being eliminated. What kind of effect do these specific cuts have on the Miami Valley?
At the moment, these cuts are just going to be felt around the margins. Obviously, if you are a temporary employee and are let go as a result of this directive, it's going to have a big effect. But the majority of the 29,000 employees at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base will not be directly affected by this new order, and they will continue their jobs as they have done. There will be some effects. Conferences, for example, are going to be curtailed. And that does have an effect on the Dayton region because we do have a lot of defense-related conferences, and many members of the Defense Department will not be able to travel to Dayton to attend those conferences. That's going to have an effect. It could have an effect on some suppliers who sell things like furniture to the base because the announcement that came out curtails furniture purchases and other purchases that are deemed to be non-essential. If this continues through the summer, it could affect the air show because the announcement that the Materiel Command made also curtails air shows and flyovers and familiarization rides. But by and large, the announcement is not going to have much of an effect at the moment on Wright-Patterson or on the community. This particular announcement is just putting everyone on notice of what could happen in the future, but at the moment, we're okay.
Now, in the future, we're talking about these automatic spending cuts, the sequestration cuts that will go into effect unless Congress reaches a deal by March. What are you all expecting?
Well, we are hopeful, but like others, we can't predict what Congress will do. There actually are two crises affecting the defense budget. One is, of course, sequestration, which is automatic across-the-board spending cuts. But there's another problem which has not gotten as much attention but also could impact the budget, and that is Congress's not enacting a year-long defense appropriation measure. Every year, Congress passes an appropriation measure for the federal agencies that covers 1 year. The fiscal year started October 1st. Congress has not passed any of the appropriations bills. Instead, Congress passed a catch-all stopgap spending measure, which continues funding at the same level of the preceding year. And in the case of the Defense Department, that spending level is lower than what was anticipated for fiscal year 2013. And so as long as we're operating under a continuing resolution, we're actually spending less money than the administration had originally budgeted. That continuing resolution comes due also in March. And if that's not replaced with the traditional fiscal year 13 spending bill, then it will cement in place the lower spending levels, and that could entail budget cuts as well.
What could this look like for us?
The big concern is furloughs. That is to say that civilian employees would be asked to take time off without pay, and that would have a significant effect, obviously, on those employees who are furloughed, because that would mean a reduction in annual pay over the course of the year, and it would also mean a loss of money into the Dayton region. Now, the Defense Department has put us on notice that furloughs could happen if the budget situation is not resolved, but the Defense Department has also made it very, very clear in statements from the Secretary on down that furloughs would be a last resort.
With all this uncertainty in the budget here, is there a concern about another BRAC any time on in the way, another base realignment and closure?
There is certainly the possibility of a base closure round. Now, that has to be authorized by legislation. The administration can request a BRAC round, as they did last year, but then Congress has to pass it. And a base closures round wouldn't necessarily hurt Wright-Patterson. In fact, there's always the possibility that we would gain, which is what happened in the last round of base closures in 2005. Wright-Patt picked up about 1,100 jobs. And so if there is a round of base closures, we, of course, do have vulnerability, and missions could be moved out. But based on precedent, there's a good chance that we would actually pick up missions. But it's a gamble. We don't know what will happen.
I've been speaking with Michael Gessel from the Dayton Development Coalition. Thanks for being here today.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning on WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Emily McCord will return on the other side of this segment with this week's Reinvention Story. If you've seen Lady Gaga's Born This Way music video with its psychedelic-looking zooms, flashes, and interweaving forms and patterns, or the abstract montage images in Terrence Malick's recent film Tree of Life, you might be surprised to learn that a Miami Valley artist helped pioneer this iconic visual style as an experimental filmmaker in New York in the 1960s. Judd Yalcott's nearly 50-year artistic career includes exhibitions at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York and the Centre Pompidou in Paris. In February, the University of Dayton honors Yalcott's global and local contribution to the arts with a retrospective exhibit that includes film, video, collage, and multimedia installation. WISO's Community Voices producer Susan Burns spotlights Yalcott and his artistic inspirations.
I recently visited with artist Judd Yalcott to talk about his upcoming exhibition, Visions and Surrealities, at the University of Dayton, and the experience was quite a trip. A quick YouTube search results in some of Yalcott's best-known works, with visual effects like glowing, neon-bright scenes and patterns, wavy television lines, overlapping image montages, and lightning-fast in-and-out zooms, with soundtracks ranging from the Beatles in psychedelic mode to the Byrds to Moonlight Serenade. His films and other works aren't intended to tell a story. They are meant to overload your senses and expand your mind.
My work has been between two extremes. In Sufi dancing, the whirling dervishes reach states of ecstasy which put them into communion with higher levels of being. And then on the other end, you have like the meditative form, which is another way of going inside and create a continuum between the inside and the outside. And both of these are means of getting to the same place. And actually, I mean, you can't tell where one begins and one ends in the end. So that they're the antipodes of altered consciousness.
I'm Jean Philip. I'm a professor of art history at the University of Dayton. And I'm curating the Judd Yalcott retrospective at the university. Judd came to Ohio from New York and developed the first film and video program at Wright State University in the early 70s. We chose works that reflected 40 years of the artist's work, beginning with works in the late 50s and early 60s in film and media, collaborations with well-known artists and musicians and dancers, works in holography that were developed with the University of Dayton Physics Department and Research Institute. Also, we have two-dimensional collage works that were included in literary journals. His work as a filmmaker, media artist, teacher, and arts writer has impacted the Dayton community for over 25 years.
Yalkut's experimental films and videos, some made in collaboration with art world superstars Nam June Paik, Yayoi Kusama, and Trisha Brown, have been exhibited in museums and galleries around the world. Yalkut's known for his explorations into emerging electronic technologies, from film to video to holography, but for him, it isn't about a love of the technology itself.
In terms of the filmed images, I have often worked with natural elements, but it's been transforming them through both digital and analog means. I mean, it's enhancing these different forms of experiencing life. I was always interested in media as a means of humanizing technology, and so it always had a spiritual context to it for me.
You will see a lot of Buddhist imagery that comes up in his work from time to time.
Art educator Pam Houck.
He talks about his time in California, going west as a spiritual quest. And at that time, he met a lot of other poets and a lot of other artists who were very interested in Eastern philosophies. When he went back to New York, then he sort of gravitated to artists who were also interested in these things.
New York's vibrant art scene inspired multidisciplinary collaborations with artists, choreographers, and composers that would determine the course of his artistic career from that point forward.
Well, the whole thing about life in New York at that time in the early 60s was a lot of interactive things between people and working in different disciplines in the arts. And everybody working in the arts at some point or another met or knew or hung out with other people in other arts, and just all overlapped. And then, of course, one of the big breakthroughs was when I started working with Nam June Paik, who was the really the great innovator in trying to do things with, we'll call it television that time, because video was, like, really evolving.
Yalkut's work connects electronic technology with art history, contemporary society, and personal expression. University of Cincinnati professor Ben Britton.
Judd has been part of that flow, that tradition of using technology to humanize it. I think his work is an inspiration to younger artists. They see how he freely appropriates advanced media tools and uses them in a completely liberated, unabashedly personal way.
The Judd Yalkut Retrospective Exhibition at the University of Dayton opens on Thursday, January 31st from 5 to 7 p.m. with an artist talk in Gallery 249. A film screening and symposium will be held at Art Street on Friday and Saturday, February 22nd and 23rd, with a panel discussion on Saturday. For more information about the exhibition and accompanying programs, go to arts.udayton.edu. This is Susan Burns for WYSO.
Just yesterday, WYSO was pleased to welcome our third Community Voices class to the studios. To hear more stories from our budding producers, check out WYSO.org.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. This week, it's an unexpected food destination with award-winning journalist Ann Applebaum. We talk vintage baking with back-in-the-day bakery Cheryl Day and discover nearly instant garden success with England's Jekka McVicar. That's The Splendid Table from APM.
Tune into The Splendid Table this afternoon at 1 on 91.3 WYSO.
This is Judd Plattenberg of Oregon Printing in Dayton, Ohio, and I've been underwriting with WYSO for over 5 years now. I never cease to be amazed with the new business that comes in the door because people have heard us on WYSO. If you own a business, I think WYSO is a great place to direct your marketing dollars. To me, it's a true investment that really does yield a great return.
Call 769-1390 to find out how you can become a WYSO supporter. This year, WISO presents Reinvention Stories, a multimedia storytelling project that asks the question, how does the city of inventors reinvent itself? One answer for Dayton is its immigrant population. The city developed a plan called Welcome Dayton to embrace new people and cultures as a way to rebuild the economy. Here's Emily McCord.
For today's reinvention story, we meet Mona and R, a married couple from Iraq. They're refugees and asked us not to use their full names to protect their family members back home. R doesn't speak much English, so Mona told me their story. I met them at the East End Community Center in Dayton, where they're getting help assimilating the life here after leaving their home in Iraq.
Maybe you will be surprised because we used to live so safely and we have no problems. Although we have a bad regime there and dictator one, but we get used to live that life. We have our job, we have our car, we have our home. And after the war, everything changed. He was working with American company and it was a civilian, it's not military, but he's been threatened because they consider him like a traitor. So they left him an envelope with the bullet inside it, and this is a sign that we will kill your family. Yeah, and our house had been shot in. Yeah, a stranger came and shot our house. The closet of my little girls that was, there's bullet inside it and holes. I couldn't go on there. So we didn't think about, this is the only decision that we were thinking about our family. We didn't think about the car, the house. So I just flee. We started all over with our saving in Egypt, and it was so hard. Yeah, it was so hard because in Egypt, they are a poor country, and they assume that we have money. So they raised the rent for us. They didn't help us in food. They didn't help us at all. So after we went there, after 6 months, I said, I want to see my parents. I want to go back. He said, you cannot go back. Even if I'm thinking about see them, the ticket will cost a lot. And my husband said, it's a risk to go there. You have to go to a neighbor country and meet there. But for the tickets, too much for me. But to tell you some secret, I love to see them, but I will be just destroyed after seeing them because I said, I've been a long time. They changed. Look at their hair. Look at the color. Look at the wrinkles. They just get old. And they cry. They see my children and cry. They say they get old so fast. And, you know, for my children, they speak American. I was like, don't speak at home American. We will go there. We will see your grandmother and grandfather. They won't understand what you're saying. You have to learn Arabic so you can go back and talk to them. So it was by accident a friend came and said, why you can't go to America. You work with the troops and with the American company. You can go. You know, it was a plus for God to come here because we get the refugee help benefits. And we get the food stamp, the insurance, medical insurance. And after 8 months, the struggle starts on again because we have to look for a job. I tried. I tried a lot. I just worked when I came here part-time translator. But it's hard when you have a very small kids. You don't have a relatives. You don't have a mom. You don't have a father or something to have a job with a very limited wages. You have to put in daycare. So I prefer to stay at home, and I'm thinking while we're studying. We want to be U.S. citizen. This is our place. That's it. I was thinking at the beginning that we will get it. We go back home. But you can't. You're just thinking, what about my children? They have to continue here. They should have something for their future. I can say it's good here. I can see from teachers in school how they behave, how they treat my child. I can see it in facilities in everywhere, in hospitals, and I think it's something like psychological thing that they think that they give you the green card after 1 year. Because after 1 year, everything changed in your mind. It's like you feel like, I belong here.
That was Mona and R, Iraqi refugees living here in Dayton. Emily McCord spoke with them at the East End Community Center in the Twin Towers neighborhood in the fall. And just recently, Mona told us that she had indeed decided to go back to school. She's getting her master's in education with a focus on foreign language so she can help refugees like her learn how to speak English. Reinvention Stories is brought to you by WISO and Local Lore, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, Incorporated, in collaboration with ZEGA, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of late winter. Now the year is 3 weeks old and late winter has begun. It often seems by this time of year that the cold will never end and that the nights will never be short enough. But on January 27th, the day's length, now growing at the rate of 2 minutes every 24 hours, reaches 10 hours all along the 40th parallel. The dark morning sky already prophesies the summer. An hour before sunrise, Orion has set. Sirius, the dog star, has moved deep into the west, Cancer and Gemini following it. The Big Dipper is overhead. June's Arcturus is coming in from the east, and August's Vega has risen in the northeast. Last week, the titmice were calling, and this week the owls are courting, and the great flocks of crows are breaking up, and the cardinals will start to sing half an hour before dawn. In 2 weeks, doves will call. In 3 weeks, the skunk cabbage will be open. In 4 weeks, the sap will run in the maples and the snowdrops and aconites will bloom. In 5 weeks, the crocus will blossom and the pussy willows will almost all be out. In 7 weeks, the daffodils will flower and goldfinches will turn gold. In 8 weeks, bright forsythia will bloom and then the wildflowers of middle spring will come in all at once. It seems that spring will never get here. But really, there's hardly time to get ready. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of late winter. In the meantime, don't wait too long. Spring is almost here.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WISO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to member-supported 91.3 FM WISO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WISO.org, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next on WISO, The Book Nook.